What If, the Len Bias Story, hosted by Jordan Ritter Kahn, is The Ringer's latest narrative podcast. You can find new episodes every Wednesday on the Book of Basketball 2.0 feed. Here's a quick trailer.
You've heard his name, Len Bias, 1980s phenom, second pick in the NBA draft. And then, cocaine, tragedy, one of the most shocking deaths in sports history. 35 years later, Bias's legacy is still making an impact. From Spotify and the Ringer Podcast Network, this is What If, the Len Bias Story. I'm Jordan Ritter Kahn.
It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer partner of the NBA. It's just what you need to sit back and enjoy the game. And they're also getting fans closer to the game than ever. You can win exclusive NBA prizes like courtside seats, signed memorabilia, and more. I love Michelob because of how light it is. It's only 95 calories with 2.6 carbs. You know what the perfect time for Michelob Ultra is? A little doubleheader, a little NBA doubleheader. Right at first half of the first game. I don't know, West Coast time, that's usually about 5 o'clock, 5:30. Perfect time for a beer. You can do it. Grab a pack to enjoy today. Learn more and enter for your chance to win at MichelobUltra.com/courtside. LDA 21 and up. We're also brought to you by TheRinger.com as well as The Ringer Podcast Network. If you missed part one of the two-part extravaganza with Russillo, which feels like it happened a million years ago, we talked about Nets Bucks. We did our top 40. Just an exercise. We weren't saying it's an official list, but it was an exercise. Now we just watched Suns Nuggets. This is going to be part two. Me and Russillo coming up first, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, Russillo is here. I imagine this is what you would look like after, like, your grandson graduates from college or something. It's just, you're just beaming. I'll just give you the floor. I have a lot of thoughts, but you take the floor. It's Chris Paul Appreciation Night. You go.
We all know how much I love him. You know, I've said how frustrated maybe as much as any single player. I mean, it's kind of funny that, you know, my all-time favorite athlete's Charles Barkley, and he came up short. And he has to hear about it all the time. I think it clearly hurts the appreciation of how special a player he was. And if you look at this generation's players, I mean, you know, other than Steph, it's probably Chris Paul. And yet Paul, you know, for a bunch of different reasons, some his, a lot having nothing to do with him, just coming up short. And so now to get back to the Western Conference Finals, second time since Houston, and that loss to Golden State in that series, and he got hurt, it just... I don't know, man. I feel like you watch a guy for as long as we've all watched him, and I know how special he is, how smart he is, how he just plays the position differently than I think anybody else in the league does. And yet, with the rings culture, it's like, nah, but I can't appreciate him. And I also kind of get it. You know what I mean? Like, I get some of the counter arguments. It wouldn't be just fans and media. Like, I've heard from other guys and teams, like, oh, you know, he's tough to play with over the course of the year, the way he plays. That's why they keep losing the playoffs. And I just, like, refuse to believe it. So, you know, look, they're in the Western Conference Finals. They still have a lot of work to do. But to see him play basically flawless basketball for four straight games is just a reminder, I think, of people kind of going, oh, yeah, this is why Russillo loves him so much.
Well, we did the Book of Basketball podcast about him, what was that, 6-7 months ago, and talked about the conundrum of this guy is on paper one of the best point guards of all time. And we both hate rings culture, but at the same time, you're going to come away from his career asking the question, well, why didn't this translate to a title? Why didn't this translate to a finals appearance? And we broke it down. We went through everything. I don't think either of us anticipated when we did that podcast that he hadn't found the perfect team for him yet. You know, and it's weird to think somebody could be in the league since 2005 and played with some really good players. But this is the team that has brought out all the best pieces of him. And I think the game he played tonight, I've seen a lot of good Chris Paul games. That was up there with one of the most dominant performances he had. He had everything cooking. He had the mid-range game. He's getting guys involved. He's doing the whole thing. And you talked about the difficult to play with part. You know, maybe that's a piece of this where now that he's the old guy, now that he's been in the league for this long, now that he's playing with guys who grew up watching him, it resonates a little differently, right, than it did for maybe Blake Griffin in 2013. But Griffin was like, I was on this team first. Wait, don't you're telling me what to do? Like, he clashed with some of those dudes. He's not going to tell James Harden what to do. It seems like he's in the right spot. And I got a little emotional watching him hug Monty Williams at the end there because, you know, we've seen these teams get thrown together over the years. This is a team that it was authentically built. They made a lot of smart decisions. And they really, really leveraged this great relationship that he had with Monty Williams. And it just seems like this is a team that pulls with for each other. The chemistry is very Spurs-like. It feels very Duncan Popovich-y, the way the guys, you know, even like when Jokic, evil Jokic for a second there, did that foul. And the whole team kind of came in to protect their guy. And that, you know, this has turned out to be Chris's masterpiece. You know, it took a while. I think they're going to make the finals. They're peaking at the perfect time. But with Chris Paul, as always, you never know. We've seen the rug get pulled out from under him before, and it's hard not to think about that, right?
Yeah, I imagine that's probably why he's been getting so emotional. You know, he's been emotional towards the end of this year and then, you know, getting through the Lakers and to sweep a Denver team that I think when you looked at them, you go, okay, you know, this isn't surprising. They had a good record after the All-Star break. They still had a good record when Murray went down April 12th. You know, they were actually a much better defensive team after the All-Star break than even Phoenix was. You know, there's so many times with Denver where I feel like, all right, can I really trust them to get stops? Do they really play great, that great a defense? And it was weird because Phoenix actually slipped quite a bit defensively in the second half of the season, which seems crazy now because you're right, Bill. They're so locked in. And, you know, it's kind of that Nets conversation we were having, you know, even when they were healthy. And now it looks pretty devastating with the two injuries to Kyrie and Harden. But, you know, growing up watching basketball, we'd like to think that there's something great about teams that all understand each other.
Yeah.
You know, the chemistry thing is real. You know, it's like a band that's played together for years. Basketball at its best, that's what it is. And it was like the Nets were going to just spit in the face of this concept. And if they were healthy, they very well may have won this whole thing. And still, you know, we don't know yet, so you can't completely write them off. But when I watch Phoenix, they're the most locked in, consistent team, knowing exactly who they are, what everyone's supposed to do. I don't even think it's debatable. I mean, even Milwaukee gets stagnant and weird. You know, Philly has good moments. I think offensively against a really good team, we'll have to see how they look closing a game. Utah's had Conley out this series. They had Mitchell out for long stretches. The Clippers, you know, have had all sorts of guys missing games. So when you think of the thing that you're supposed to love with basketball and everybody knowing how to play off of each other, Paul orchestrates it, but it's a great collection. I mean, it's such a nice starting five because you go, okay, this guy does exactly this. And like, where other players feel like they disappear, I don't ever feel like Booker is necessarily disappearing. I don't feel like Bridges is disappearing. They'll just have moments where they ride it out and then Paul gets them involved again. And you just have a lot of different ways of beating teams.
Even Ayton tonight, you know, he didn't have a great stat night, but all those dudes are present. I feel like they're around and available. I don't feel like they're checked out, all that stuff. And it was interesting. He said at the end, he was so psyched, Chris Paul, that they had all these fans that came to Denver. And he's like, I've never been with a team that traveled before. And you think, like, this guy had a pretty fucked up career, right? He starts in New Orleans. Katrina happens. They have to play a year in OKC. He goes back to New Orleans. They don't have an owner. You know, his fifth, sixth year in the league is running the team. Finally, he has to get traded. He ends up going to the Clippers, which is the, you know.
But after the Lakers thing, that was weird.
Right, the Lakers thing falls through. He ends up going to the Clippers, a team that had no history at all. Spends a couple years there, goes to Houston, has this weird James Harden thing that goes back to OKC. And he ends up on this Phoenix team. I did a whole thing maybe 2 months ago on my pod because 2 months ago I was like, this team, I don't know if they're going to win the title, but it's not inconceivable to me. This is a weird year. But talking about the history of the Suns and how really since they lost the coin flip for Kareem in 1970 when he was Lew Alcindor. And it's just, they've always been kind of in the mix. They made the finals 7 years in, and they've just repeatedly been able to reinvent themselves in these really weird ways and yet have never gotten over the hump. The closest they came was 1993. And now they're back again. I think like the seventh or eighth time since 1976 when they made the finals that they were able to reinvent themselves on the fly. Go back to that when they traded for Chris and we thought he was going to go to Milwaukee. It was like, cool. Yeah, all right, this is good for them. It's a good young team. This is a way to keep Booker. They'll be competitive. They might win a round or two. I never remember you and I talking about, hey, this is the Suns can win the title now. That didn't seem conceivable, but this is the magic of the Suns. They have been over and over again. This franchise has been able to all of a sudden be in the mix. It's crazy.
Yeah, look, I remember when it was happening, and I think you had maybe said it first, like, look out for Phoenix. So, when you say, like, hey, both of us were saying he's definitely going to Milwaukee, do you remember? Is that what we said? I don't remember
We thought that was where he would end up because
he wanted to go there.
Yeah, he wanted it, and
right,
it made the most sense.
Right, but that me hearing about him wanting to go to Milwaukee like predates all this kind of stuff. Because then when I asked around, and it was like, no, he'd like to go to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And then when he got there, he's like, no, he loves it. He loves it here. And Booker, I'm sure Booker. It's kind of like the Kyrie thing in the beginning when he didn't want LeBron to come back, and then you were like, really? You want to go right. 30-52. And I'm sure Booker, after a couple frustrating years, is like, this is incredible. Like, look how easy my life is with this.
About these guys. These guys hit the lottery with this. Yeah. I think Booker had a chance to be a multi all-star. The stuff he learned this season, the experiences he's had, and being on this team is, you can't even measure what that's going to mean to him over the next 8 to 10 years. Chris Paul, what he's done for Ayton, which we've watched over the last 6 months. We're eight now. We did our top 40 earlier, and I think he was like 31 for me. I just really like him. And I think he is a big guy who really gives a shit, whose heart is in the right place, who tries. Bridges, who was another guy we talked about during top 40, where, I was like, maybe next year this guy might be on the list. Because to me, he reminded me of Jaylen Brown in that 2018 range, where it's like, I know the stats don't say it yet, but there's something here as a two-way guy that he has a chance to be like a special guy on a really good team. And I think, going back to Chris, like it's all flown from him. There's only, not to sound completely overboard, but he's the only guy in the league who could have done this, where there's no other point guard like him. He's, when he rides off into the sunset, it's not like, all right, well, this guy's going to be the new Chris Paul. This is it. This is, the position's not played like this anymore. The new point guards that are going to come into the league are going to be emulating Dame Lillard. They're not going to be, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just the reality of the situation. Point guards are going to come in, and they're going to be guys that shoot 10 to 12 threes a game. And they're going to be guys that need you to come out and set picks for them. And they're not going to be able to orchestrate an offense and have that kind of impact on other players like this. I think this is the last of a dying breed. I really do.
He could add 50, 60 if he wanted to tonight. I'm serious. And he only took 19 shots. He was 14-19 tonight, 37-7. Game 3, 27-8-6. That's 8 assists, 9-16. Game 2, 17-15 assists, 5 boards, 6-10. Game 1, 21-11-6, 8-14. He made every free throw. He didn't take a 3 tonight. And that drag screen, where they run two screens at the top, like, he just knew, and that's the beauty of Chris Paul, and that's why I still can't believe at certain times at the NBA level I'll get frustrated being like, do you not realize what to attack? And Chris Paul never has that moment. I already know what he's going to try to do against the Clippers. I already know what he's going to try to do against Utah, depending on who wins on that side of it, all right? And so I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves and already have him in the NBA Finals, but I'll pick him against either of those teams. But there's still a lot of work to do because I don't think they're like far and away better than those teams, because I just think it's that wide open right now. But Paul knew at every moment with this game, especially when he got going in that third quarter and didn't miss a shot. And I don't know how much longer he would have stayed in with a substitution pattern because he got hit in the eye before the Payne Jokic play, which I'm sure we're going to get to later. But he knew every time, like, Porter doesn't know what to do. And I thought Porter's defensive mistakes when he first...
They destroyed Porter.
Right.
It was a destruction for four games.
Porter's defensive mistakes were, like, egregious in your face when he first started playing. Like, you're like, oh, that's why. And I still think Malone could have at least tried to put him out there in you know, when they'd had some injuries and he still refused to play him. And he's a special shot maker, but you can see with Porter Jr., there's just moments where he's like, how about that breakaway where he got the and one in the foul? He had a guy who was right wide open. He never even looked at him the whole time. And look, he got the and one, so it worked out for him, but it's kind of like where Porter's in his zone. And then there was that play late in the game. It was close to kind of deciding it all, where he didn't even see the back screen. There was a back screen on the big by Booker, and that was going to leave Porter at the rim against Chris Paul, and Porter never even saw it. Like, he didn't process any of those things, and it was a wide open layup for Paul. So that's the advantage that you have. Not that he makes shots, not that he's the assist numbers, not that he's a good shooter, not that he's making all of his free throws. It's that he's just not going to let you go like three horrible possessions, which was kind of scary because, you know, this game got weird in that, hey, you know, they cut it to five, right? Like, it's like, oh, Jokic is out. This game's over.
I was never worried though.
No, I wasn't worried either because everything felt like it was really a struggle for Denver offensively. And then you could see like everybody was kind of just taking turns. But like campaign for the love that he will, I think after he got hit, he was so mad. He was like, I got this. And then there was a possession where Paul kind of came back in and got the inbound and was like, hey,
yeah, bro,
I'm going to set this one up now.
Settle down, young buck. Back to the Porter thing. I love Chris Haynes. This is not a dig on Chris Haynes, but they threw to Chris Haynes for a report. And he's like, sources told me the Suns are trying to hunt Michael Porter. And I'm like, we've been watching. This has been their entire offensive strategy. Like, we're seeing it. That was, you know, one way. The other thing is Paul didn't have to play defense in this series. He's going to have to play defense next series against Utah. Against the Clippers, maybe not. You know, he might be able to hide off on Reggie Jackson, but if you think of Chris Paul like a DH in this series, that's the best way to think of it. Because all he had to worry about was the offense. He didn't have to work at all on the other end. This was a severely below average backcourt. I had a couple things to throw at you with Chris. One, so actually, let's take a break because I have a big thing to throw at you.
This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever. That's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals like job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are more likely to convert, and even in some cases, most likely to convert. Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date data fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Start your 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
All right, so I was thinking about best old guy title runs. I did not send this to you. But, you know, in football, like the defining one was Elway. And Elway wasn't that old, but he was old when he won in 97 in Denver. And it was a legacy alterer. Even people who didn't like the Broncos or didn't care, they were so fired up. You know, it was like great. And it changed the course of his career in a way where you look at like Marino or Barkley, you mentioned earlier, people like that. And it's just like it lifts that giant monkey off your back. Basketball.
By the way, real quick though, that first Super Bowl for Elway, he was 6 years younger than Brady.
Right. Yeah. He was 37. He was a young pup compared to Brady. Basketball does not really have a scenario like this Chris Paul thing. I went through it. I have my whole list of best old guy title runs for you. The closest we can really come to this was 2011 Jason Kidd. But Jason Kidd was not the same player in 2011 that he was at his peak. I think what's interesting about Chris, when you're watching him, especially today, that's about as good as he looked at his prime. And that's what's been special about him this year is he's been able to summon peak Chris Paul when he kind of needs it and even for extended stretches. But going through, just quick, I swear I'll rip through this. The 1969 Celts was the best old guy title because that's like Russell, who knows he's going to retire. Sam Jones, who also knows he's going to retire. It's the
end. Were they like a four seed or something?
Yeah, they're four seed. They're underdog every series. And it's just like old guys sucking up. So I got that one. 1972, when Wilt and the Lakers, they went 33, that whole thing. Wilt was 35. Now, he was still throwing his fastball, but I'm just going to mention that one. But here's another really good one. Sorry, it's another Celtics one. But 1976 Celtics, where the Warriors are supposed to win, they lose in seven to Phoenix. Havlicek is kind of at the tail end. He's got plantar fasciitis. Nobody even knows what that is. He's playing with it. He's limping around, and they end up holding off the Suns in the finals. And classic, classic old guy title for him. 1985 Kareem, where he becomes 14 years apart, wins finals MVP, 71. And 1985, he was, I think, 37 years old at that point. 98 Stockton, they don't win the finals. And he was just older than Malone. Malone was still really good. Malone was still top five players. Like Stockton was at a point where he's only playing 28 minutes a game. So he's in there. 2006 Shaq, older. It's an old guy title. He wasn't the best player on the team. 2012 Garnett, where they almost make the finals. And that's like kind of the last Garnett run. And then Miami in game six, game seven, too much LeBron. And then one of my favorites, the 2013-14 Duncan on the Spurs, where, and I was doing countdown for the 2000, for both of them actually, but in game six, they're up 3-2. And I remember saying before the show, I was like, I think Duncan's going to play one of the great games of his career. He can smell it. And he came out, I think he had like 24, 25 in the first half and was just doing all that old guy stuff. They end up losing the series. They come back the next year, they win. And that's our last old guy title. I think what's special, and by the way, we could throw in 1998 MJ, but he was the best player in the league. It's hard to call it an old guy title. I think what makes this Chris Paul thing so fascinating as we get closer, they're 8 wins away. It combines a lot of these different pieces, but he's still playing really well. Like that 2013-14 Duncan, he wasn't Duncan anymore. He wasn't 2003 Duncan. But
the shooting carried them offensively too. They had some shooting games where it was just like humiliating. So
right. But he could get there for a half, but not for a whole series. I think Chris could, the way what we're watching, I think could get there a whole series. So he's got all the different pieces of it, but he's got I think to make the finals to really make this feel real, which now I would say they're the favorites. And I think what's so cool about this, I did my pyramid list, I think in March. I just redid it. And I think I had him like 42. This is like one of the all-time legacy alters, even if they make the finals. Now it's like Chris, with all the other stuff he has, and the only thing you could hold against him was, well, but all right, so why didn't he make a finals ever? Now if he makes a finals, not only is it one of the great old guy title runs, but I think he has to be in the top 20. I would have to put him there.
All time?
Yeah, I think he has to go in that. Like he's at least in with Barkley and Malone and guys like that. He's with those dudes. He's with Isaiah. I think that would be the last piece for it.
Yeah, because the overall stats are going to be staggering for him when he's finally done.
Yes. You know?
So he'll have the stat part of it, and he'll have a resume that I think is really impressive in that he's gone to four franchises and he completely turned them around. But I'd have to look at it. I'd have to look at like where I would kind of have my top 20 guys, because like Hakeem's still going to be ahead of him. Moses is going to be ahead of him.
Yeah, the Pantheon guys are all ahead of him. He's in that. He's with like, you know, Malone, Barkley, Isaiah, Dwayne Wade, people like that. I think that's the neighborhood you would have to move into. If he brought this Suns team that was this young, that had no playoff experience at all, none, and he brought them to the finals, and he went through the Lakers, granted Davis get hurt, he beats the MVP in the second round, and whatever team they play in the next round is going to have spent more money and have more playoff proven guys, and that's going to be a really hard team to beat. If he makes the finals with this team, I think it changes the way we would look at his entire resume. This was the only piece that was missing.
Utah's not going to have a lot of playoff proven guys. But they've been
in the playoffs for the last few years. Like,
yeah, I know.
They've
but
gotten
I guess
experience
I don't really...
compared to like Booker and Ayton and Bridges and people like that.
Sure. I guess I just don't like when I think playoffs, I don't think Jazz.
Well, we both think the Clippers are going to win that series, right?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
All right, we'll get to that later. Save that.
The Mitchell part of it is a concern. So Yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue against where you're going to have Chris Paul in the all-time rankings. I just don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. You know, I just don't. It sounds
what
like
do you
you're
think
already...
of the old guy title run thing, though? Because it was fun when Kidd.
It's
when
different
it happened
though.
For Kidd too, right?
Yeah, but Kidd was a role player who transformed his game. I mean, Kidd went from a guy who couldn't shoot to then he was like this spot up two guard, which is one of the crazy. Is the thing I always thought we were going to see from Steve Nash if Nash's back had held up, where I thought he could come in late. Or come in with a second unit and just go out there and get you buckets. Because I always felt like every time Nash shot, it was going to go in. But you're right. This is different because as much as I appreciate Duncan, which I think it's pretty well on the record of how special I think he is. And he kind of gets hosed a little bit in some of these all-time rankings things.
Not for me.
Himself. But Paul is the focal point. This isn't Paul being carried
by. This is his team.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, Booker can score more. And Bridges has these great moments. So, you know what I love too is I don't know if it's a Paul thing or if it's Monty Williams or maybe it's just the guys. They're bringing in the right guys. But like that Bridges will keep cutting the secondary cuts where he's like, I'm not giving up on the possession. I'm going to give you an out. You know, and if I don't get it, I'll make a cut again the next possession. I'm not going to sit there and be like pissed because I didn't get the ball the one time I cut like some of these guys in the league. Ayton will chase. He'll run. I mean, he had a couple plays when Jokic was still in the game where like Jokic was just a few steps behind him because Ayton got off a miss. And ran the court, and you know he wasn't always getting those passes or some stretches in the middle of the year, and now he's getting them again. So, yeah, right. I mean, he's the star of this show, even though the stats wouldn't say it. Where you know even Garnett was being carried offensively by some of those other guys because even as Garnett got older, I mean, he was always kind of a reluctant offensive player, even at his peak.
Right.
And you weren't ever running your offense through Garnett because he didn't really want to do it that way.
But he was a lot like Chris and like his personality became the personality of the team. And that was what was so interesting. I went to a lot of those Clipper games and really was analyzing it and trying to wonder what was missing with it. And, you know, I just don't think Blake and DeAndre and those guys, and honestly, Doc Rivers either kind of bought into the, this is Chris's team thing, the way the Suns team did. And it's not, I'm not placing blame. I just think those guys were at different points of their career. Like Blake was convinced he was one, and he didn't have reason not to think this, that he was one of the cornerstone, potentially one of the cornerstones of the league, that he was going to be one of the next big superstars we had. And I remember when they got Chris and he got introduced first and then Blake got introduced last in the starting lineups. And I remember writing about it at the time, like, this is pretty interesting because really, Chris should be introduced last, right? He's way more accomplished than anyone on this team. But they were already worried about the Blake piece of this. Well, this is Blake's team. And they just were never able to navigate it. That team, you could see the dissension and the dysfunction on the court. Whereas the Suns have no dysfunction at all. And maybe Chris got older. Maybe he knows. Maybe he's learned some lessons over the years. But I'm happy for him. The other thing I was thinking was, how dumb the two Houston years seem now, where it's like, just what a waste of two Chris Paul years to have him standing on the side where it's like Cam or Harden doing this dueling banjo. I know it worked. I know they won games, but I so much more enjoyed this version of Chris Paul where it's like, oh, you're the best pure point guard we've had in the last 20 years. Like, this is great. Do this. Make all the other guys better.
All you have to do is watch Chris Paul over the course of his career and know that he had to have hated what they were doing in Houston, okay?
Yes.
Because I'd heard a story where Paul was like, people actually think I can't get past people off the dribble. Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, you think I'm to the point where I can't dribble past guys in this league? Like, that's bullshit. And he's like, the problem is if I have the ball, the other guy stops playing and everybody knows, like, they can help. And, you know, we've been over this before. Like, some people were convinced that it was just Harden's brilliance and spacing. And you're like, no, when he's not in the play, he's just not in the play.
You're 4-5.
So now all of a sudden, Paul's going, like, what's this? But it's Harden's team. And so you could see at times, like, remember that time when they were in a timeout and they were kind of, look, guys go at it all the time. But, like, it made it look like Paul was super difficult. And Harden's, like, looking at him being like, what? And it's just Paul knowing how much he loves movement, everyone kind of figuring out how they fit in, like that just wasn't going to be something we want to do. And they still won 65 games. And they still, you know, if Paul's healthy, probably get out of the West and maybe win a title. Who knows? That Cleveland team was really good. But what
I will never think they were going to beat the Warriors that year. I know it would have been 3-2 or whatever, but I just feel like the Warriors would have They would have summoned it.
But look, I give it to Houston because they can't play together, and you know the closing moments are different, but they staggered them beautifully. And I think that Daryl, I think he deserves credit for, even though there can be some usage rate guys where I'm like, what are you guys doing? I think Daryl was like, look, if the math says that this player is this per possession, like, why are we taking the ball away from him? You know, so let's just let our main guys have the basketball all the time. And they figured out a way to stagger those guys well enough.
It almost worked. Yeah, they almost beat an iconic team.
They were smart defensively in that they go, we're going to be absurd with how we defend five, or we're going to defend three with five. And we're not going to care about the other guys. And you could see Golden State get really stuck there. So I don't know what would have happened, because they would have been beating, you're right, a truly iconic team. But I also think it's worth mentioning that, you know, it's a bit like the Joe Frazier thing without the belt for Paul, where you say for 5 years in the West, you're going up against Golden State, arguably the best five we've ever seen.
Well, in retrospect, bad career move, right? Because he had the chance to control his destiny. And this is where, like, chasing a title goes wrong. He chased a title, a little reminiscent of Barkley, when Barkley tried to chase it with Hakeem and go to Houston. And it was never the right fit. It always felt a little weird, him and Hakeem together. In retrospect, if he was going to get traded from the Clippers, I just wish he had gone. Going to the East might have been smarter. Trying to get away from the Warriors for a couple years. I know that they succeeded in Houston and won 65, but for what he brings to the table, I wish we could do that over again. There's a bunch of things I would love to do over again with Chris's career. One of them is not him going to the Lakers, because I think that would have gone badly. But, you know, there was, going back to 2005, there was that Paul Pierce, Chris Paul trade where Chris could have ended up in Boston. There was other trades with him in 2010 and 11, and he was rumored to be going all over the place. And, he finally ended up on the right team. It's crazy. At eight, what is he, 36?
36.
He's been in the league. He was in the 2005 draft. And this is the first team I've ever seen him on where I'm like, this completely makes sense. I love this.
Because even those Clippers teams, and they'd win a bunch of games, and, you know, Doc didn't gain many fans when he said basically Golden State was lucky because they're always healthy all the time. You're like, look, they're also better than you guys, too.
Yeah,
all right?
Stop.
So there's that. But if you think of, like, a reluctant shooting Blake for the first half of his career, you know, Blake developed a competent 3-point shot. You know, he developed that as part of his game. But I mean, it used to be kind of tough to watch just the indecision from Blake and not being comfortable. So now you have a Chris Paul who's kicking it back to a guy that doesn't necessarily want to shoot, DeAndre Jordan, who can't shoot.
Well, hold that point though. You had those two guys in the paint because Blake couldn't shoot yet.
So that's what I'm saying. So
but
now,
I mean, but Chris had nowhere to go. He would go in there, and those two, whoever was defending those two guys, could just jump off on him, and they thought it was the right thing. They were like, "This is great. This is how you play basketball." And they didn't realize what the Suns have realized pretty quickly is, like, clear it out, send picks, double picks, all that stuff. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, but I mean, think like how quickly the league shifted too, and that teams were falling over themselves to give DeAndre Jordan a max.
Right.
And it was a lot of it.
And now he can't play.
Right now.
Seriously. Now he can't go on the floor. I have this to throw at you. The Chris Paul trade regret rankings.
Okay.
This is my list. I didn't consult you on this. Number one is Milwaukee. On this podcast, when they made the Jrue Holiday trade, you and I talked about that we just would have rather had Chris Paul. Chris Paul was sitting there. It would have cost a first and some contracts, the Bledsoe Hill contracts. I think Chris was in a position where he could have decided what team to go to, because he had a deal with Presti. It's been well documented. Presti was going to do right by him, because Chris came after that Westbrook trade and was such an awesome teammate and threw himself into the experience in such a profound way that Presti was like, I'm going to do right by you. And Chris wanted to eventually go to Phoenix. But I think Milwaukee was sitting there initially. I don't think it would have been that pricey. And we said this at the time. I was on the record that I would rather have had Chris Paul than do all the picks that I gave up for Jrue Holiday. And I think they could have done it.
Yeah, whatever the price ends up being for the Jrue trade, which still is significant. And we all like Jrue Holiday. You can sit there and say, hey, he's 31 and Paul's always hurt and all this stuff. So I can kind of get it. But I would have imagined if you look at the prices paid for both players, if you could have paid less for Chris Paul.
It's not just less though, Ryan. It's like six picks less.
Yeah, it's dramatically less. Yeah.
And you could have used those six picks to try to get the fourth guy. Maybe that's, now you try to get Beal or whoever with the rest of the picks or whoever's available and keep adding. So I think that's, I thought at the time, and I think so now, I just thought it was a safer move by them, but they were enamored with Drew.
And maybe we're putting Paul with like 2010 Blake in Giannis.
Maybe. They're my number one. Number two is Miami, who had a couple bites at this apple, right? Heading into the 2019-20 season. You can go back and read these stories because I did it earlier. And it was like they had the Dragic. He would have been an expiring contract. They had another expiring. And they basically, they could have thrown some expiring contracts together with a first and gotten Chris.
They would have had to probably throw in one of the young shooters, though, Duncan or Hero.
I don't think... Not in 2019, because remember, he didn't have the same kind of trade value.
Oh, 19? Yeah,
19.
No. Yeah,
there was stuff about would OKC have to attach absolutely. Picks to Chris.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, that's why I kind of laugh about how much a market can change in 12 months, but that you were attaching assets to Paul to get Westbrook's contract. Like, think about that out loud.
Well, all love playoff Dragic, but if you put the Chris that we saw in OKC last year on Miami's team,
the Lakers front line still crushes them.
Yeah, the Lakers still win the title in six. But then this year, they also had a chance to get him. I think it would have been a little more complicated. I think Hero might have had to have been involved. At the time, I think maybe I would include myself, I think our opinions of Hero were probably higher.
Yeah.
But
everyone's
safe to say.
Yeah, I think it's safe that we've adjusted what we think of Tyler Hero a year later.
So I have Miami too. I don't think for this year. I think for 19, it's a legitimate thing because I think they could have stolen him. And I think people are really, if you go back and read all the articles, it was all about everybody wanting to keep the cap space for Giannis in 2021. Got to keep it open. Well, Giannis signed an extension. That became stupid immediately. So I have them second. I have the Knicks third.
I knew you were going to bring up the Knicks.
Well, they could have stolen him a year ago for nothing. You go back and read the articles, it was like, not sure we can give up Kevin Knox. I just think they could have swiped him. And they had the salary cap space and just flipped Derrick Rose for Chris Paul this year with all the other pieces they have. They're not winning the title, but it's a more interesting team.
I wonder how much pushback he would have had, though, going to the Knicks, going, who am I going to play with? You know, at least you can look at Booker. You could look at Ayton. I mean, I don't know how tuned in Paul was to Bridges, but you're right. I mean, he and Presti, because of how he handled himself, and he just took that franchise over last year. I think Presti felt like, hey, I got to make sure. Because I had heard a story, too. It was like, you want to try to run this back one more time or something? It was like, no, we're good.
No, thank you.
Like, I did everything it asked of me, and I didn't take a ton of time off either. Like, I took it seriously. And, you know, hell, they still almost won a first-round series last year. The Knicks won. I'd agree they should have done anything they can, because I think sometimes the GM job, we make it more comp. I think it's way harder than people do. That's why I'll kind of be like, well, you know, you did this and it didn't work, but they did this because of this reason and this reason and this reason, and the rest of the options weren't that great. But then on the other side of it, you could also be like, what's the debate in the room when you're like, hey, do you want to get Chris Paul? No. You know, like, think about it. Just think about it that simply, going, do we want to add this? Because again, you just have to pay 90% of the cap anyway. So you're saving your cap space on a short term. And that's why it'll be really interesting is this continues to see what he gets when he opts out.
Well, Leon and Wes, he had that whole thing with the Knicks too. I think the Knicks were sitting there because there was a moment where it was unclear if Phoenix was going to put in a pick. And if they didn't put in the pick, I think the Knicks could have pounced. But look, if they make the finals.
Gets in Ntilikina's development though. It gets in his way.
Well, I know Knox and Ntilikina, they just said no, pick other guys on the roster. If they make the finals, though, Chris is going to tear up his contract and probably go like 3 for 90, something crazy. He'll be making somehow more money. We were always talking about that $44 million option. Oh my God, that's the worst contract in the league. And he'll be signing for longer than that. I have one more team in the regret rankings. They probably don't even know they're on the list. Why wouldn't New Orleans have made a play for him last year? Why couldn't everything that's happening with Phoenix right now have happened with New Orleans?
I thought there was a little bit more of a kicking on the tires than you're suggesting. But I don't know how formal that is.
Just how about this? Chris Paul, Drew Holiday, Zion and Brandon Ingram with just some rotating big men. I'm pretty sure that team would have been successful.
Okay, but what are you giving? You giving up Lonzo? You got to figure out where the salary. I mean, you got to give up somebody here.
Yeah, I think you have to give up Lonzo. Maybe they didn't have the contract. They had would have to get to like 40. Maybe they didn't have the contract.
Then 25% of the numbers, so they didn't have to get to 40. But I'd have to look at it. I'd have to look at the salaries were coming
in. But I was trying to think, was there another team that was kind of sitting there that could have been Phoenix, right? Who had some good young players. We never thought of them as a playoff team. And then Chris showed up, and now they're in the Final Four. And New Orleans is the only other team from a talent standpoint. And then you could argue, I don't have them in the regret rankings, but if the Celtics had pulled off some sort of Kemba, Kemba, Chris, something.
I was waiting for this.
I don't think it was on the table.
I have a question for you now, though. When you look at the East, would the Celtics be the favorite if they're still around?
Who do I have? I have everybody on the team?
Healthy? I'm just messing with
you.
Do
I have a healthy
It's still
Kemba?
A no. It's still a no.
Is Robert Williams healthy?
Robert Williams is healthy and Fournier's locked in.
Fournier?
Yeah, he found a townhouse he feels comfortable with. It's close to everything. It's close to CVS and Duncan.
I have a couple other just notes from Phoenix, Denver. The Aaron Gordon thing was a debacle.
Do you want to look at his numbers real quick?
The defense was good. The offense answered our question of, wow, I wonder what Aaron Gordon would look like on a team that knew what it was doing. Well, we found out.
He had 18 in game one, 6-4 in games two and three. He had eight, I think, for the game tonight. He had 4 points when the game still kind of mattered. He is a different limited offensive player when he's not allowed to just kind of take possessions over because Orlando didn't have anybody else to get in his way.
Right. When he can't go Jeremy Grant because his team sucks. And yeah. It's like, oh no, I have to. There was a couple really, really aggressively bad post-ups that brought back Antoine Walker flashbacks for me.
The hardest he tried tonight is when he wanted to get a technical on somebody from Phoenix. When Chris Paul spiked the basketball and he like darted over the ref. Well, all right, what did you think of the Jokic ejection?
He's the fucking best regular season player in the league. I'm not sending him packing on that play. Treat him the same as you would LeBron and Durant, and LeBron wouldn't get tossed on that.
No way.
Get the fuck out of here. Like at some point, the superstars have to be treated a tiny bit differently. We treat LeBron too differently, but there should be some sort of leeway with the best guys. And this is, Jokic just doesn't have a history of being a dick like that. I mean, it was definitely a violent play, but he was going for the ball. He hit the ball. I think it seemed like his arm kind of brushed Payne's nose, which was accidental, and is a horseshit call. They're playing for their season.
I hated the ejection, and you know I've seen guys not get ejected. It was clear he was mad because he didn't get a call, then he hits him. And then even though it wasn't like flush, Reggie Miller, even in the beginning, he's like, what are you talking about? That's all ball. And you're like, or you got to remember, like somebody the size of Jokic swiping down on you, a guy that big,
he
doesn't have to be flush for it to hurt. And then Payne is down in a just a pile. So if Payne gets up earlier, if Payne gets up earlier, it's probably just a one. And that's unfortunately what everything is. It's the landing and the reaction after the hit. I don't like it. I don't like it if it's not Jokic. I just don't think it's a violent play.
If it's Patrick Beverley, I'm throwing him out because he's got
But if he has a history where he's diving at people's feet the entire time or running into people, if you watch Beverley for 5 minutes away from the ball, you're like, I can't believe this guy isn't fined all the time.
He should just be in the hockey playoffs. He's in the wrong playoffs. He should be in the NHL playoffs.
He's Brad Marchand in high tops.
Right. Oh, Marchand's better. Marchand's an incredible offensive player.
No, I agree.
Crowder, who all these free agent exception guys, and he became the best one by far, but I was like, man, this guy's been in a lot of playoff games. Can you guess how many playoff games he's been in since 2017?
Off top since 2017?
The 16-17 playoffs. So 2017 playoffs.
I'll say 65.
Did you look that up? That's the exact number. It's 65.
Wow.
There's something to be said for like, hey, that guy's been in 65 playoff games. And
I definitely didn't look it up, by the way. I know you think I did. Right. My hands are right here.
But to be like, yeah, that guy's played in playoff games against LeBron James, who's in the finals last year. Like, that guy's not really sweating out this game four clincher against Denver. And the fact that you can go small ball four with him next to his center, or you can play him like, and he can shoot threes. He's not afraid. He's a little tough. Like, it's weird we didn't value him more in the free agency. Like, you look at it and you're like, why didn't that guy get like 45 for three from somebody? That was so hard to find guys like that.
Would you agree, though, he's had a couple runs over the years where it was sort of disappointing, though? Like,
yeah,
he was with
bad
Boston.
Taste in your mouth? Yeah.
Yeah, and then remember it was like, oh, don't get guys after Brad Stevens, back when Brad Stevens was the greatest coach of all time. Like,
yeah,
there was this concern.
This so
post-Brad Stevens experience where Brad was just so amazing that everybody get, you know, he maximized everybody's skills. So I think some Utah fans would probably tell you, like, Jay Crowder, you know? So I think he had had a few little dips along the way, but he played so well last year that you would have thought, you know, maybe the market would be a little bit stronger, 3-and-D guy. I mean,
do you know
seem
old
to think
is?
There's a 32?
30.
30. All right.
Yeah. Young guy.
Marquette guys always, I always think they're older.
Why do you think Ayton has gotten so good at avoiding foul trouble? I thought the Denver Phoenix areas, I was like, well, Denver will win two because you know Ayton will get three fouls in 2 minutes.
He actually had fouls tonight.
But he somehow learned, he knows how to play in foul trouble, which I think is such an underrated big guy skill.
They left him in one of the Phoenix games with two.
Yeah.
Early. And I went, whoa, like that's saying something. I think the biggest thing with Jokic is if you don't go for the up fakes, you can probably survive.
Right. He kept moving and kept his hands up. Interestingly, in the last year in the playoffs, that's kind of what Dwight and Davis did too, right? They just kind of keep their hands up. They keep moving. They don't kind of go for anything. And they almost don't want to get roped into a foul. But they just keep use length. And it bothered him a little bit. I mean, he still had awesome stats in the series. He had a 22-11 tonight. It hurt his career playoff stats. But he was still getting his stuff. It was just harder. At least they were making him work.
Yeah, he was.
He's amazing.
He is amazing.
Amazing. His team was so
swept.
Bad.
They
Look
get
at that
swept.
Team he had.
Right. I'm serious, man. Like, if you're doing the Jokic sucks deal tomorrow, like, I'm sorry. Like, I just can't.
Well, you know our guy Coward. You know what his 9 o'clock lead's going to be in the PT.
Well, tomorrow. I could see his tweet. He said Chris Paul is making a mockery of the MVP. Coward called me this weekend, but I was playing hoops, so I didn't pick up. No. And I thought for sure, I was like, I'm getting his Monday open right now. And I already know it's coming. Look, hey, I'm the biggest fucking Chris Paul guy going.
Yeah,
and
you are.
I'm telling you.
He was not
he
the MVP.
He wasn't the MVP.
Yeah, he wasn't. It's we can't do the thing where the playoffs has validated whatever you thought the regular season, with one exception, the 1998 finals, when it was ludicrous that, or 1997 finals, when it was ludicrous that Karl Malone won the MVP. And then we just got to play it out in the form of an ass kicking. Did you like evil Jokic? Do you think he should pursue this? Wrestling heel Jokic? Do you think he should get like a facial hair goatee thing going and really couple tattoos that just make him seem more menacing? Should he take this further? I didn't like when he apologized to campaign. Go the other way, Jokic.
I liked when he was saying to Booker, what are you going to do? And he said it over and over and over again. And I think there was some spittle. It wasn't a direct spit, but there was one spittle moment there that I thought was probably tough to be on the other side of that. But it's just one of those deals, like kind of like when a corner gets into it with a tackle. And the tackle's like, hey, look, like you're probably, you know, strong and think you're tough and everything, but I'm a left tackle and I'll, like, if I get my hands on you, I'll destroy you. And I think Jokic, like, nobody wants to look like a punk, but when Jokic is from Serbia, basically spitting on you, looking down on you, being like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do over and over again? There must be some moments when you're 7 feet and you're enormous that you can just be like, look. Like, yeah. I know no one thinks I never have to fight, so my punches aren't great. But like, I'm a huge human being.
It was great. Booker was there. Was that extra 2 seconds where he was like, "Oh shit! I thought some other guys were coming in." Like, <where's, laughs> this guy still mad at me? Is there anywhere?
His road security guy to knock Jokic out of the way. That was so weird with Durant and PJ Tucker, because when I was watching it live, I go, wait, is there a guy at the Bucks arena that pushed PJ Tucker? And then we all realized after the fact it's Kevin Durant's personal security guy.
Crazy.
But it was because it looked like, wait, he just got pushed out of the way by a guy that ran out of the court. And then, of course, after the fact, you're like, yeah, he's not going to be working anymore. We're like, okay, that seems like the right decision.
He will not be at the arena anymore. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll try to rip through the rest of these storylines in 20 minutes. This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. 7-time world champion, modern day legend, my favorite quarterback ever, Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, finally gets roasted. It's going to be hosted by Kevin Hart, and Tom Brady will get his cleats held to the fire by famous friends, frenemies, the Roastmaster himself, Jeff Ross. It's going to be an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady live only on Netflix. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank. Unlike this podcast, some things in life should be boring, like banking, because boring is pragmatic and responsible, level-headed, wise, all the things you want your bank to be. You don't want your bank to be exciting. Exciting is for three-point buzzer beaters, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money, because when your money is doing what you need it to, you can do all the unboring things you want to do with it. PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Brilliantly boring since 1865 is the service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc., PNC Bank, National Association. Member FDIC. All right, we're back. Did we do enough Chris Paul? I thought we devoted enough time. We're at the 47-minute mark here. Clips Utah. I don't know why it took the Clips 3 games to realize the right lineups to play in this series. I don't understand it. They've spent, $20 million a year in their front office, and it took them 2 full games to be like, oh, we should go small. Maybe Terrence Mann should play a little bit. Maybe we should just fly around on defense with a smaller lineup and put the ball in Paul. Like, I do think they've unlocked it. If Mitchell's not 100%, that's good for them too. My only point on this series, it feels like it officially starts tomorrow night, and I'm psyched because I'm going to be there. But I think this was 3 games of feeling out, and tomorrow night the series starts. And here's the thing with the NBA. They're going to need at least one of these series to go to 7. It could be Bucks Nets, I guess. Although if Kyrie's out, that series might be ending faster than we thought. But this to me just feels like a 7-game series. Do you ever just watch a series and go, all right, this is going to be 7?
Yeah,
I feel like this is a 7-gamer. Am I wrong?
No, and you know, I think the Clippers thing here, as I've mentioned a bunch of times, like, you know, you wonder, will this guy check out? Will this guy be comfortable in a tight spot? I mean, they're down 2-0. They're down 3-1, and they got through it. And they came back, and, you know, Kawhi played a brilliant game 6. Marcus Morris was really good in 7 as well.
Surprising.
It seems like they've abandoned the Rondo thing. And I don't love, you know, sometimes we can be a little too deliberate when we'll just be like, oh, this coach is an idiot because he didn't do this. I don't understand the Beverly minutes over Terrence Mann. Mann played 8 minutes and 1 minute in the previous 2 games. And Mann at this stage is just better offensively than Beverly is.
I would argue he's better defensively too, because you don't have to worry about him committing a flagrant foul or doing something that's going to swing the momentum of the game, because, you know, all of a sudden the other team's shooting 4 free throws because your guy decided to check somebody into the scorer's table.
Yeah, it's always a concern, but I think Beverly has a lot of that Draymond in him where, you know, you say, like, why do you have to do all these other things? And it's like he just can't. His whole career, his whole game is dictated on him doing those things, and Beverly's the same way. Like, no one thought I was good enough, and that's where I think he plays with his resentment. I think he's a very dirty player. I don't even think it's debatable.
I think he's the dirtiest guy in the league right now.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Like, he is. But Man is just better offensively, and I would think it would be exhausting to continue to do all the stuff you would do if you were Patrick Beverly, where Man, to your point, is kind of just out there playing. So they've gone small, and when Gobert isn't in there, they attack the hell out of Favors. They were way better on their doubles with Mitchell, where Mitchell was doing damn. I mean, that first game, some of the shit he was doing against the doubles where he was splitting them was so good. And I think it's to everyone in the Clippers' credit that they showed a level of intensity that they can get to. But did they only show that level because they were desperate and down 2-0? Maybe. And then Mitchell on the ankle thing, you saw him kind of split and you're like, oh no, like what's going to happen here? And then, you know, there's still no Conley. And I was reading today, like he could be there for four or maybe miss the entire series. You just don't know. So I don't have any info on it, any of that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think this series feels like seven games because I don't think like the Clippers all of a sudden just figured it all out because they're going to go small and now they're not going to lose any because Paul George was really good in three. And I'd expect a bad Paul George game again. I'm going to ask you a question though. Do you know how many times since these two guys have been together, how many times Kawhi and Paul George have both scored 30 in a game?
Like 22?
Five.
Oof. Really?
Yeah. Game three was the second time this year.
That's weird. I don't think they're a good fit together.
I just don't think George is consistent enough. I mean, it's okay to have two wings who can have the basketball. Like, I actually think you'd still want that. But then Ibaka, you know, like another part of this Clippers thing too is to not have Ibaka for any of it. Now he's done.
Well, that was your mid-level guy. Like even if they right. signed Crowder, that's at least exactly. he's playing. I have some FanDuel odds for you.
Okay.
Utah's -184 to win the series. Clippers are +154. Clips are +390 to win in seven. Jazz are +250 to win in seven. Clips are +410 to win in six. If we
you like the going, Clippers. You're picking the Clippers, I can just tell.
I got to say, sometimes I really believe in this stuff. As you know, I'm a karma guy. I believe in ghosts. I believe in weird shit. It really felt real to me today that Chris could end up playing the Clippers to go to the finals. It felt like that was the destiny of all of this. The Lakers, Davis getting hurt when he did. Jamal Murray going down 2 months. There's all these weird things that are pushing Chris toward this thing that has eluded him with all the bad luck he's had. And the last piece would be going against the Clippers in round three. I just fit in my head. It just makes too much sense. And here's the thing with Chris and the Clippers. He's the best Clipper ever. And it's not close. He's the greatest LA Clipper of all time. The Clippers do not have a retired number. They moved from the Braves to San Diego in 77. They spent, I think, 7 years in San Diego. They moved to LA in 1984. They do not have a retired number. Chris is the best player they've ever had. Blake Griffin's the second best player they've ever had. Kawhi is the third. He's only been with the team 2 years. But Chris is the best Clipper ever. And if you want to go further, like, he legitimized the franchise. They were a fucking joke. They had Donald Sterling as an owner. They never won anything. They only had one good year in 35 years before he showed up in 2006 when they lost in round two. And the Clipper fans talked about that 2006 team like it was the 86 Red Sox. And he comes in and he completely legitimized them. And even though Lob City, we look back at it now, is disappointing and all this, and they 2014-15, they choked both years. At least they were playing for a title. They were in the mix. They had a chance. This is the only time in the history of the team that they were like that. And now they're like that again this year. And now Chris would be going against them. And I think it would be fucking cool. I'm into it.
You might be right. I'm still staying with Utah unless Mitchell's really banged up.
I don't think Mitchell's healthy. I didn't like what I saw the other night. That to me seemed like more than just, oh, I tweaked my ankle again. I think he was managing
80% real pain. 78%.
Oh, you want me to do it?
I always want you to do it.
I'm going to say 81%.
Yeah, sounds right. Feels right.
Felt like about 86, 87% at some point there in game three, but then I think it dipped off. Nah, I don't think he's healthy. And I'll tell you this. Kyrie was in a walking boot and crutches after the game, as reported by Rachel Nichols.
Did you see the owner's quote?
Yeah, it made it seem like Kyrie's out.
Yeah, that's how I read it. I mean, it was kind of weird to have it. But again, if a guy's out, he's out. You know, you can pretend and keep it a secret for 48 hours. And if he's not ready to go, then he's not ready to go. So I think people spend too much energy on this stuff. But the owner's quote was basically like, we will not rush Harden back for Kyrie, and you were like, oh, okay.
Because Kyrie, so they showed the replay, and I was, as somebody, I'm sure you, what was, you must have had at least one horrible sprained ankle playing basketball, right?
Yeah. I mean,
so
it's, it also is the time when it's not, well, whatever. Nobody wants to hear about our injuries and pick up hoops, so I'll just keep it moving.
Well, the thing is, when they showed the replay and his foot bent, and it was like, oh, that the way it bent, that, that'll be all right. And then there was one last piece to when it bent where all of a sudden it was his, the top, his toe is going toward his body. And I was like, oh, that's like, the, you're just not playing on that. You're not coming back from that. And if you come back, you're going to be like Isaiah in the 88 finals where it's like, you're basically playing on one leg. They have a whole bunch of science now. They didn't say if it was, I don't think it was a high ankle sprain. I think it was a low ankle sprain. They have a whole bunch of science now. They can do the electrodes for 24 hours. They can do all that shit. You're still not playing 4 days from now at more than 75%. Just no way. And you think about how footwork oriented he is and how technically brilliant he is and how much his feet are a part of everything. If you're compromising that, he's just not the same guy. He's a three-point shooter and he's not going to be able to drive.
No, and he's obviously like he would have been, because there are times you'll see a guy turn it and it's kind of bounces back perfectly and it scares the shit out of you more than it actually hurts.
And that was not this.
That was not, no, no. You're not going to be in a boot and crutches if it was like, no, it gave me a good scare, but I'm just going to be in a boot and crutches over here. So yeah, that sucks because, you know, look, everybody knows we're not the biggest Kyrie guys, but I still kind of love watching him play.
Oh my God.
Locked in. I mean, give me a break.
It looked like today before he got hurt, it looked like we were about to have like a Kyrie run. And I was like, look, he's my least favorite basketball player. I was here for it. I was like, let's go. Let's watch this. Now, granted, I'd bet on the Nets, but,
for the series or just game four?
Yeah. Look, I don't hate any basketball player. I still, I don't hate any athlete. But, you know, it's
Lambert. You like
Lambert? I kind of hated Lambert. You're right. I hated Lambert. Lambert's the one guy. Oh, and Elf Samuelson. Those are my two.
Yeah.
And Paul O'Neill, I hated his guts as well. I guess so. There's three. I really hated Paul O'Neill.
Wait, is Paul O'Neill your least favorite Yankee ever?
Yeah, I fucking hated that guy. You know what I hated more about Paul O'Neill than just hating him? How the Yankee fans. And I'm sure John Jastrzemski will listen to this and text me, but the Yankee fans were like, oh, fucking Paul O'Neill is the fucking best. Like, they sang his virtues in a way that really bugged me. It was like, all right, he's a 290 hitter. Settle down.
I hated a lot of those Mets a lot, like Wally Backman and...
And
Ray Knight and... All those guys. I hated... That was like my first... That was like me being Luke Skywalker hanging out with the Emperor where he's like, let it flow through you, you know? And I just was like... It was the first time I ever felt real hatred for an opposing team because I just was like, I hate all these guys. And
I hated Kareem.
You know who I didn't like as a Yankee was Scott Brosius annoyed me. You want to know why? Because like he came over, he hadn't been good at all. And then he was really good for him. And it drove me crazy because I was like, oh, this is exactly what the Yankees need. On top of all the other guys they have, they just add Scott Brosius, who nobody really wanted, and he fits in perfectly. So,
yeah.
No, nothing personal with Scott Brosius, but that was, you know, my peak unhealthy years were those late 90s, early 2000s. And then once I was in the business, stuff just bothered me a lot less.
I wrote a column once about the concept of sports hate. It's fun to hate certain athletes. You don't really hate them. You don't hope something horrible happens to them.
Yeah. I wouldn't run into Scott Brosius and be mean.
Right. But it was really fun to sports hate this Nets team, the way they're put together and the whole thing. But at the same time, like you're watching them and when they were on, it was just beautiful to watch. Like when Kyrie or Durant would get going, you know, there's nobody like those two guys and they're not replicable. So, I saw Perkins tweeted. I actually went on Twitter because I was looking for Kyrie info. And Perkins tweeted, KD has a chance to have a really, really special game five. Right? Like from a historic standpoint, one of the great ones. I feel like KD's legacy is secure no matter what happens in this series. But I also didn't disagree with the point because Game five will be KD against the Bucks, and they have PJ Tucker to throw at him. They have Giannis to throw at him. They have Middleton to throw at him. They can trap him. They can put Jrue Holiday on him. They have four really intriguing different types of defenders to just rotate on him constantly. And if Joe Harris doesn't show up and he doesn't have another shooter he can trust, it's going to be really hard for him to navigate. But at the same time, I think he's the best player in the world, and I think he's going to figure it out.
But see, this is where, I mean, it goes without saying, but like, this is the problem now, because when you had Harden, you have a ball initiating offensive player, right? Who can dribble, who can set people up, can shoot. Kyrie, not the exact same thing, but checks the boxes for all of those things. Can initiate the offense, can dribble, can keep a possession alive when everything's broken down and figure
and
out some kind
streaks.
Of angle and some pass.
And can have an 8-point streak in 2 minutes.
So now you have Durant where, and look, Perkins' tweet is fine. There are other tweets out there where this is the part of NBA Twitter that sucks, is somehow then it becomes like, well, if Durant can't do this, then that means this, this, and this. And you're like, you know what? Just
no.
Can we give it a couple hours here? Can we give it a couple hours? And Blake is not a ball initiating player anymore. Joe Harris, although, has a little bit more well-roundedness to his game. You know, kind of like when people think Seth Curry just stands in the corners. Like, no, actually, Seth can put on the floor a little bit more. But still, that's asking a lot. Brown is not a guard. Jeff Green is a catch-and-shoot guy. Claxton is not a ball initiating player. Mike James actually is probably a little bit too much. Are you going to go Tyler Johnson? Are we going to see Luwalu Cabarro here? Shamet's a catch guy. So now you're going to ask Durant to carry this team offensively without like a really good guard to set him up.
But here's the thing though.
That's asking a lot.
Here's what people don't realize and they don't factor in with stuff like what happened today. These teams, they have a game plan. They know what they're going to do. They have their rotations planned out and all that. You lose Kyrie during that point in the game when you lose it. We talked about in part one, they seem shell-shocked for like a half hour because it's like, holy shit, like, did we just lose the title? So they're dealing with that. On the other hand, you're also, you're kind of refiguring out a game plan on the fly. You're on the road. You're playing a team that was playing pretty well. Now they have 2 days to actually come up with a game plan. If it's just going to be built around Durant, they didn't have that luxury as the game is going on, you know? So look, their shooters are going to have to show up. They're going to have to take a lot of threes and basically do what Milwaukee did today. Milwaukee just took a shitload of threes. What do they end up with? Over 50? Like they were fucking chucking them up.
Yeah. Then they were hitting them.
Because they were like, look, our offense was awful. We couldn't have looked worse. Our points per possession was a disaster. Let's just shoot more threes. And they did. I think at one point in the first half, they had like 26 or something. But
look, as great as Durant is, and we're in agreement here, it's asking a lot of anyone to have to set it all up himself and then win a game. You know? I mean, there are guys that do it, but I just the rest of that team isn't exactly somebody you're passing it to and asking them to create on their own. That's what I'm saying.
Well, and on top of that, if they're going to let the Bucks do the stuff they did in game 3 and 4, he's not going to be able to win the game by himself because the physicality they had.
There's no way they'll let it. They won't call it like that. They won't, because it'll be such a big deal between now and game 5.
They have to lobby for those calls now for the next 48 hours. The thing is, Tucker played it brilliantly. He was really physical first play on. This is an old Chris Paul trick. I'm going to be really physical right now. And if you don't call it right now, I get to do this for the rest of the game. And that's what Tucker did. Tucker did in game 3 too. I'm going to be right in this guy's jersey. I'm going to be really physical. And, cool, you're not calling it? Great. And then that's it. So I agree with you. I think they will call it in game 5. I wonder... We don't think the NBA rigs this stuff. If you're the NBA, isn't it better for you if Milwaukee wins the series?
No. Market-wise alone.
No, I'm not talking about market-wise. I'm talking about fans, narratives. Instead of like, oh, look, any three guys can throw together a championship team and then... You know, basically two of them quit on the teams they were on as the season was going. And now you win the title versus like Giannis, homegrown star, signed an extension, smile on his face the whole time, got over the hump. And now it's like the last piece is now he's in the finals and this is like a bigger level of stardom, right? And then on the foot, on the West side, Chris Paul is the greatest narrative of all time. Like Chris Paul being in the finals would be the greatest thing that happened for the NBA this year, because it would just be a Chris Paul love fest for 2 weeks. I would say within the league, he's probably the most liked player.
So, yeah, but Milwaukee's, everything you said is fine. You know what I mean? Like what should happen, what should be rewarded, who should win.
I'm just talking narratives.
And all that kind of stuff. But to have an evil major market team like Brooklyn, if Brooklyn is considered evil, which I think there'd be a lot of people rooting against them.
Yeah.
I think that would probably draw the most secondary eyeballs to it.
So you think Brooklyn Phoenix would be your best, if it's Vince McMahon is figuring this out.
Well,
he would pick Brooklyn Phoenix.
Well, he'd probably pick Clippers Phoenix, wouldn't he? Or Clippers Brooklyn.
Hmm. Phoenix has to make it now. The Chris Paul thing, I think, could be the dominant.
Do you think there's enough people, though? Like, we're the wrong people to ask this stuff, but it's always about the secondary, the tertiary viewer. Are there enough people drawn to the Chris Paul story that somebody who isn't normally watching the finals? Because as much as I love him, I think that's a bit of a reach. I think it's a great storyline for us and for NBA people. I just don't know that, like, is somebody's girlfriend going, oh, I want to watch Chris Paul now? They do that with LeBron. They do it with Steph.
I'm going to make one of the best points I've ever made on this podcast right now.
Well, I can't wait. I'm not going anywhere.
Here's what you're discounting. I think a lot of people know him from the State Farm ads. I think he has a weird, crazy level of fame from those ads. I think those are the most effective ads. I'm not just saying this because State Farm has done a lot of stuff with this podcast. I think those ads are incredibly successful and effective. And somebody like my daughter who knows nothing, it'd be like, oh, Chris Paul, Cliff Paul. Like,
She's going to watch. She's going to watch for 2.5 hours because of the State Farm.
I just think she likes Chris Paul from those ads. It makes no sense. But I think there's a lot of people that really like him from those ads.
It's a fair point. I don't know. I don't know if that's enough. Like, if you were on The Bachelor, yeah. No doubt.
Listen, Phoenix, if you're going Phoenix, Utah, or the Clippers, Phoenix is by far the best option of those three for, like, big market. Who fans care about. Nobody knows what to make of this Clippers team. It's not like there's people like, oh man, can't wait to run it back with Kawhi.
If Brooklyn were healthy, though, I think not just
Brooklyn
because
Clippers
the Brooklyn
for
part,
basketball. Yeah.
Yeah, but also you would have so many people rooting against the Nets, but they would watch it.
Right.
You know, that's the difference. That is the difference with any of these sporting events, and it's why baseball struggled so much, is you have to care about the outcome of a story. And it's why the F1 thing is picked up with a bunch of us that watched the 3 seasons on Netflix, because now I actually care about these guys a little bit.
But I think Chris Paul, they can market it that way, where it's like, this is one of the best players of his generation, one of the best 25 players ever. This was an odyssey for this guy to try to make the finals, and he's made it. And we are going to make you care about this over the next 2 weeks.
Hey, I hope so. I'm not
like
sure,
that.
Though.
Giannis would be the other one where it's like, this kid from the streets of Greece rose up the ranks. First round pick. Nobody expected anything. And now he's here and he's the face of this league. He's the globalization. It goes through him. They could do that whole thing. Milwaukee Phoenix Plus. Coin flip, the rematch. Heads was Lou Alcindor.
Tails was Neil Walk. It'd be Charles Pierce tweeting about it.
Listen, people listening at home, Google Neil Walk. The guy had like a full sheet of back hair. He was like one of the hairiest guys in the history of the league. He was a center. I would compare him to like Frank Kaminsky, like kind of level talent. And that was the consolation prize to the Kareem lottery. Kareem was the third best player of all time, or second. You see him or LeBron in the 2 or 3 spot. And the Tails was Neil Walk. And that's how the Suns started everything. And now all these years later, they can make it.
If you were still on Countdown, that would be a good little segment for you.
Yeah, I think everyone would have just stared at me kind of in horror and just waited to throw it to another thing. We didn't talk about Philly at all. And this podcast is about to come to an end, but we have to, because nobody is more excited right now than Sixers fans. Milwaukee fans, even though they have a chance to win this series, for all the reasons we laid out in part one, they still know. They know that this team is not running on all cylinders. They know that they don't have a bench. They know that there's some real offensive struggle shit going on. And even if they get by Brooklyn, it'll be more because Brooklyn had two major injuries. Like, I'll just say this for any Milwaukee fan that would come at us. If they lost Chris Middleton 43 seconds into the series and then Jrue Holiday in the second quarter of game four, would Milwaukee beat Brooklyn? The answer
right.
is no.
And imagine both those guys are even better.
Right. So the answer is no, you wouldn't win the series. You caught an unbelievable break here with two injuries that now you have a chance to win. But if you're Philly and you're healthy. I don't know what to make of this Embiid thing, but he's playing. Danny Green's out. On the other hand, that means more Thibel, my guy. But I don't want to write off Atlanta yet because I could see them hitting like 25 threes in game four and all of a sudden it's an even series. But I just don't think they have an answer for Embiid. So unless he gets hurt, Philly's going to win. The Embiid thing is just insurmountable for them.
Yeah, it's just too easy.
It's too easy.
I don't know why that would change all of a sudden. Like the Trey stuff was too easy in game one, but I think all of us that saw what their potential options were, like you didn't have to be a basketball genius to go, you know what? Like you can probably figure out some different ways to attack this thing and it has worked. So it's those two elements that I don't know why there's going to change. Like Trey could still go off. Like who are we kidding? I mean, it's Trey, but it's never going to be as easy as it was the first 24 minutes of game one.
The Hunter thing is such a bummer.
Totally.
If they had Hunter, it seemed like he was running in shape. Now he's out again. But if they had him, I would take it more seriously. But it feels like they're a guy short. Like there's some legitimate Solomon Hill now.
Solomon Hill's been playing throughout. So
no, but I mean, now it's like they actually need Solomon. Now it's like, hey, Solomon, do you think you can get us 12 points? What do you got in you today? Can you hit a couple threes? Anything? I don't know. I'm not feeling great for Atlanta, but with the thing with Embiid is it could be any moment. He could be limping to the locker room at any moment of the game. So bizarre finals. Gun to your head right now, who wins the title? You don't know when Kyrie's coming back. You don't know when Harden's coming back. You don't
Phoenix
know
over Philly.
Is. Phoenix over Philly you would have now.
I was going to pick Phoenix-Philly before the playoffs started, but then once the Lakers landed in the 7-2, then I just... Yeah. So I wanted to say Phoenix-Philly for, I think, weeks before the season. But I also, you know, every Nets pick with me was worthless. Like, you shouldn't have listened to me on any of it because I was kind of just trying to do something different on the Philadelphia side. Because every time the Nets looked right, which now has not been the case for a week, I'd be sitting at home, you know, little legal pad out, and I would just be like, why would you be picking against these guys? Why would you be picking against them? And that's the other thing, like, back to the Milwaukee part, is that, okay, so they hit some threes today. Things worked out. Kyrie leaves in the first half. But the one question mark we had about Brooklyn was their defense. And even though there's some numbers that would tell you that they tightened it up a little bit more, it's like, this is the thing that they were supposed to be bad at, and you guys can't score on. Like, do you know how bad this is right now? Like, for three games, you look anemic on offense against this team that's only question mark was his defense. It's right. One thing if you can't really stop
them. Rim protection.
Right. But now they're hurt. And so, whatever. They get him in game four. But the if Milwaukee gets through the second round, it's all of it will be met with, like, tempered enthusiasm for me. Like, look, if you're a Bucks fan, be happy. You're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, whatever. People get hurt. This is part of it. I mean, every series, right? Mitchell Conley for Utah. Clippers don't have Ibaka. Phoenix actually looked like they were going to lose Chris Paul. They didn't. On the other side, you know, it's Denver without Murray.
Davis.
And you go Philadelphia. Embiid's got an MCL that apparently wasn't that big of a deal. Green's out. All right, if you want to go first round, you can keep going that, Davis. Nets are missing
Robert
two
Williams
of their three guys.
The Celtics.
Robert Williams. Fournier. Just long-lasting COVID effect.
Oh, I have breaking news. My friend Ben Thompson, huge Bucks fan, who was on this pod a couple weeks ago, he's upset that he thought we were too hard on the Bucks in our part one podcast.
I'd expect Buck fans to not like part one. That's fine.
He said he wasn't alone. with his opinion that he.
I don't expect. No, that's a that can be a nasty group.
Listen,
you're 2-2 and you think you're awesome right now. I think if you're being honest with yourself, Bucks fans, you would have liked the offense to look a little bit better in one of the first three games.
We're pro Bucks. I bet on the Bucks. I picked the Bucks to win the series. I haven't liked how they looked in the in these first four games. And I think if Kyrie doesn't get hurt, I still think the Nets win the game. I do. I have no way to prove it.
Your excitement is the other team isn't good now.
Right. Your excitement is the other team was a three-man team that lost two of those three guys.
Right, like, so
I'm pretty sure the Celtics could have beaten Miami in 2012 if Bosh and Wade didn't play in the Eastern Finals. I think we could have taken them.
2012? Yeah.
Yeah. I think we would have had a good chance. So I will say, though, I did like what I saw from Middleton and Drew today. And I there was a physicality with Drew today that I enjoyed. Because he's weird. For, he's not that big of a dude, but he's tough.
Drew's been really disappointing in this series.
He was tough today. I liked him today. You didn't like him today?
I think this was a really weird game. It's great they got the win. It's great they got the win. It's great it's 2-2. It's great it feels like you're going to get out of the second round. But it's not an offense that I feel better about. Look, game three shook me. Okay? Game three was like, are you guys seriously this clogged up and like still can't figure out how to do this against the Nets? Like, it's one thing if the Nets are going to beat you because they're making every shot, fine, but you can't score on the Nets. So yeah, it bummed me out.
That's Neil Walk.
Oh, that's a hairy man.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Imagine having to play him. I'm surprised he wasn't more successful in the post just because guys didn't want to brush up against him.
He was really hairy. I'm going to give you some Neil Walk.
Rainmaker.
Some Neil Walk Wikipedia. Sadly, not with us anymore.
Where'd he go to school?
He went to, he was a Florida Gator, all-time Florida Gator rebounder. You can even see the hair. Wait, can you see that? The hair creeping out from.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was a hairy dude. But all-time leading rebounder for the Florida
Gators.
Some
girls like that.
Picked second, did not last very long with the Suns. He said to author Charlie Rosen that he was one of the league's great booby prizes. I never paid attention to that bullshit. How many guys would love to be the second overall pick? Played with the Suns for 6 years, averaged 20-12 in the 72-73 season. Not bad. And then went to the Jazz and the Knicks, played in Venice, played in Italy, played in Israel. And that's it.
I would have loved to play in Venice in the 70s.
There was this great run of NBA guys figuring out that they could go to Italy, like Michael Ray Richardson, and just light it up in the 80s for play until their early 40s and be able to be good. And you get to live in Italy and get paid. Smart. It's good.
Yeah, and the whole place is like
script for you.
Just go to Italy. Yeah, but there'd have to be
Neil Walk, the hairiest American player, goes to Italy to play for a year. It's a comedy.
I don't know. The stuff that's selling right now, there'd have to be some major twist.
we can debate on that. Before we go, you watched Mayor of Easttown.
I did. Speaking of great things that sold.
So you liked it. I was pushing you to watch it.
Spoiler alert. So we're just letting everybody know that hasn't watched it, right?
Leave the pod if you haven't heard haven't watched Mayor of Easttown.
Okay. You've seen Out of the Furnace, right?
Yep.
So Brad Inglesby, who grew up in these areas, he's got the whole PA thing down. I loved Out of the Furnace. He's actually he's got a brother, I believe, is a basketball coach. So he's a big basketball guy. And he just knocked out of the park, man. It was a very straightforward kind of mystery whodunit deal, twist and turns. Everybody's playing along, trying to figure out who murdered this girl. And I just thought the execution of it was, you know, it kept you engaged in trying to, you cared, right? You cared about who did it. And that's the goal of all of these shows. And he did a great job.
Did I tell you what I thought the ending should have been?
Did you know it was the kid the whole time?
I didn't. So I wanted Mary to go up in the attic at the end.
Yes.
But instead of fade to black as we see the attic, she goes up, she gets her old Converses from the late 90s when she won the state title.
People weren't wearing Converses in the late 90s.
What were Nikes?
Yeah, we would have been on Nikes by then.
Jordan 12s. grabs her Jordan 12s, goes out, takes some threes, fade to black. Mare, you know, good from 20. Like, I don't know. They didn't really go into
Lady
that
Hawk.
In the show, but yeah. Pretty much a dead-eye shooter. They 3-point line, I'm not sure, was as big of a thing as it is now, but I think more of a mid-range game. You know, like a Kiki Vandeweghe type.
Drive pull-ups.
Yeah,
a lot 12, of 12, just hammering you at the
physical,
elbow.
Physical. Yeah, a lot of offensive rebounds, stuff like that. But
maybe not a lot of rebounds per game, but when you needed a big board, Mara was going to get it for you.
Well, they were saying, like, should there be a season two? And I just think season two, she becomes a basketball coach. It turns into The Way Back. Was the Affleck movie?
Yeah, or Eddie.
Yeah, no. I think it's more dark. It's like becomes a Pennsylvania girls' high school basketball drama, and then we go into that world for a year. She's got to recruit the you know, Gino's coming to see her, all that stuff, and she's just trying to navigate that world. And then obviously there's a murder, and then they
okay.
Let
me
how that affects the game.
Do you think they threw Guy Pearce in there as a total changeup to be like, all right, this something's wrong with this creeper? Anybody that ever brings a novel to a bar and sits at a bar and reads. Like major red flags. Whenever we had guys when I was bartending that would show up to read a book, you'd be like, all right, we got to get this guy out of here before the kids show up. So the
book reader was always, should I call the police?
Yeah, right. So I think they threw Guy Pearce in the mix and he's got this ratted out hair and, you know, they end up hooking up immediately. And by the way, like Kate Winslet's job, she was awesome. And I don't want to say like I was rooting for moles. But like the way she went into this role looking like a little weathered.
Yeah.
And nailing the vibe of this town. And then, you know, the part of the script where he was like, are you related to everybody? And he's like, yeah. She just goes, yeah. Because everybody knows everybody. Like it was just it was all very believable in the execution of all these people in this small kind of blue collar town. A little Deer Hunter, right?
A lot of Deer Hunter. You know? Yeah. I've heard the Guy Pearce thing, people talking about it. We're both writers. We've been known to write scripts
That's
and
right.
stuff. I actually think people don't do this enough. And I always think like the Sopranos when the Russian goes in the woods and we're just trained to think that guy's coming back. And it's like, no, he's not coming back. We're never going to see that guy again. We'll never know what happens. I don't think the red herring is used correctly enough with stuff. So Guy Pearce, it's like, well, he's so famous. It's got to be some reason he's in this. You just assume, right? Like I just watched the Saw movie and there was an actor in the Saw movie where I was like, wait a second, this guy's too famous to be in this. I have to assume he's going to be coming back. And of course I was right. The Guy Pearce thing was just purely a red herring and they obviously just threw him a check. They're like, hey man, it's not a great part. You know, you get some scenes with Kate Winslet. She's won a couple Oscars. And you're the red herring, basically. And it worked because I kept waiting for him to, and then it never happened. Smart.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I always thought it'd be funny. The studio probably wouldn't love it, but you write a script where like Tom Cruise at the height of his powers, he's on the billboard, the whole deal, movie poster, and then you just kill him 7 minutes into the movie. Right. And you're like, wait, what?
Wait, no. Scream did that with Drew Barrymore. She was promoted. She was in the poster, the whole thing. It's a Drew Barrymore movie. And she died in the first scene and they kept it secret. It was like, oh my God, they killed her? They slid
yeah,
her head.
Yeah, and she's
eight,
great too.
Eight
she's so good
into it.
In the opening. Because I was watching Die Hard 2 the other night. I couldn't fall asleep.
Good one.
And it's so good because your buy-in is perfect. And I love how like in the second one, they go, hey, make sure when you send the fax, because remember how like the girl had the fuck me eyes in the first one? They're like, make sure she does that again in the sequel.
Run it back.
When he's sitting there, yeah, getting the fingerprints on it. And this is so stupid. I shouldn't even admit it. But it would just be funny if like there was like a 45-minute buy-in that Bruce Willis is this cop caught up in another ridiculous situation. And then all of a sudden he can fly.
He didn't realize he had those powers.
Right. And he's like, all right, I guess. And so like the movie just changes two times dramatically. And by the time like it's the last 20 minutes, he's got the powers of like Magneto. And everyone would say this script is terrible. But I just think it'd be funny if like an Adam McKay type or somebody was like really established and get away with whatever he wants to.
Yeah.
Would just go like, I'd like to write a real American, you know, shoot 'em up thriller, but then have two hard pivots that nobody sees coming. And instead of being judgy about it, just see like if you get the audience to like, instead of recoil, like what the hell is going on? See if you could actually execute it. Again, most anyone would laugh you out of the room, but I think out loud right now.
I would argue Die Hard 2 had one of the craziest flexes anyone ever did in a movie. They fucking brought down a plane full of people during the movie.
Yeah.
This is why I've been debating about whether it's a rewatchable or not. It's so disturbing. And then at the end, it's like, John McClane gets out of it again. It's like, they're the whole plane of people dead. Like, what? It's like, let's go get a beer. I always thought it was like the craziest decision to just kill everyone on the plane. I couldn't believe they did that. I'm not saying it as like, that's wrong. It's they're not taking it heavily enough. How important it was, just like such a crazy decision. Like it could have crashed and like a couple people could have died, but they killed like 200.
No, I mean, think about all the movies that we grew up on. Like normally, especially if you go to the first Die Hard, like when they were killing guys, they weren't killing anyone you were invested in, or they were killing somebody who sucked, like
or
the
who blew it,
guy.
Who made a mistake. Yeah, the beard guy. Yeah,
right.
Hard bot there.
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't like the whole building felt like blew up and the whole floor of people were killed, right? So that, it's funny that you say that, because when they crashed the plane full of people, I was like, oh. Like normally you wouldn't do that.
It's a huge
because
flaw.
I think the audience is always, you know, it's weird. Like we like sad songs, but we like happy movies. So like if you think of songs that you like, you know, and I'll go, you know, after a while, I'll usually like a band's slower songs and the sadder songs, you know, I'll end up liking those. But with movies, there's a pretty clear formula here where, you know, hey, 2 hours, escape and be at the theater. And like, wait, you guys just killed 1,000 people on a plane. And now John McClane's saying one-liners. And it still works. It still works. But I don't... Look,
it was a bad idea.
No one does anything like that. I don't even know that I'm saying it's a bad idea. I think it's funny how I processed it differently now watching it. Because I had to watch
it. Because you knew
it
was going to happen. The first time in the theater, people are like, Jesus, this got dark. I haven't thought about 24. I love 24. I watched 24 for years. And I remember 24 crossed the line like this. I can't remember what it was. Like they blew up the White House or they had like a nuclear war. There was something where it was just like, whoa, hey guys, this is my escapist television show. You just murdered everybody on it. What's going on? And I never felt the same about it after. It's just, they just kind of, I don't know. You gotta be careful with this stuff. Anyway, Mary Beastown, I think she has to take over her old high school team's vacant job. Guy died, heart attack. Goes in. She's not going to be a cop. And obviously, she shouldn't be a cop anymore after she planted drugs. You should have lost your badge after that. I don't care how many people you save after that. That's not a one-week suspension. You're done. You're off the force. So that comes back to haunt her. Ends up becoming a basketball coach. Then there's some murder she has to solve. Sign me up. Don't tell me there's no season two for Mary of Easttown, because there is. Staring us right in the face.
You're not selling me so far right now on
really?
Her with Gino Auriemma. She's the high school coach and Gino Auriemma shows up. Like I need more. Because the other cool thing of it was that basically it was two different storylines going on there where you were like, wait, are these things all connected? And it's like, nope, we're going to do kind of a Silence of the Lambs deal where we're chasing something down.
Yeah.
And this isn't really the main goal. And the main part of this is going to be later on. And then, I guess you could say, like, why did you have to set us up every episode into believing it was somebody else? But that was kind of the fun of it, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it was Roy from The Office, where you're like, wait, what's going on with this guy? And you're like, nah, just kidding. And you're like, Guy Pearce, why is this guy hanging out? No, he's just going to leave. What's going on with this? Why did, because it got a little, not challenging to follow, but when they were basically saying, like, wait a minute, you're getting this guy to confess that he did it, but he was actually just doing it for the other guy. And then, okay, this is why they're saying it was a secret, because it was the son. And that's why everybody was lying, because they son. And then you realize, okay, when the son attacks the kid with a lunch tray, you're planting the seed that he has a serious temper and he's violent. And so, okay, now that makes sense. Although, you couldn't really put it together. I don't know how many people were guessing that it was a 13, 14-year-old kid that was behind it, but I doubt
it was
there
smart.
Were any.
They laid enough breadcrumbs that it made sense when you found out, but nobody was guessing it
Oh, and by the way, that is it John McCardle? I think he's from Scotland, who plays the other priest.
Yeah.
Not he stole every scene he was in. So when you thought it was him, because he throws a bike over the bridge, that guy, I don't know that much about him. I was looking him up. I think he's in his early 30s. I think he's from Scotland. And he was like right away in all these different, you know, theaters and schools. Like he was just going to be one of those guys. He was, I didn't know anything about him. And every time he was in a scene, he was unbelievable.
Season 2, Diana Taurasi trains with Winslet for like 8 weeks. Still not in?
Season 2, Embiid moves to Easttown.
Gets involved with Kate Winslet. It's a younger man, older woman. People are like, what's going on?
Episode 3
is... Why are you dating a Sixer star?
Is Embiid is just complaining about Ben Simmons not developing an outside shot.
So Mayor fixes it.
So
she's
Mayor
like,
meets up with...
I was reading Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. You're actually shooting with the wrong hand. And that's it. Yeah, that'd be great. Definitely more basketball in season 2. I don't think that's a lot to ask for. Some sort of sports plot, whatever. All right. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. My son and I, we watched the Saw movie with his friend Lucci. And I really thought it was good. I liked it. I thought
the newest one
was good. Yeah, I think that was maybe my favorite Chris Rock movie he's ever done.
Ever?
Yeah, I think it was. There wasn't a lot of competition, but some people throw out top five. Some people throw out a couple others.
Boomerang?
He was in Boomerang. New Jack City, but he's not like the star of that. But like for a Chris Rock starring movie, I thought it was really good. Really, really liked it.
It's actually a pretty good point. Now that I think about Chris Rock movies, there's going to be stuff
never translated
here, right?
No. It's like Head of State. I Think I Love My Wife.
CB4.
I mean, the most successful movie he ever did was Grown Ups, which is an iconic kids movie. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that one.
Grown Ups 1 and 2 are iconic.
Pootie Tang?
My kids consider Grown Ups 1 and 2 on par with how I feel about Godfather 1 and 2. Not kidding. And it's not just them. It's everyone their age. Grown Ups 1 and 2 are like massive movies. All right, we got to go. Kyle's sending smoke signals to wrap. Russillo, congrats. Chris Paul appreciation night. It went off without a hitch. It was beautiful.
Still a lot of work.
Congratulations. Eight wins to go. We'll be back on this feed on Tuesday night. I will definitely be waiting until after Bucks Nets to post something. You have two more podcasts coming this week as well. A couple good guests. You've been dipping into the ex-player well with a lot of success. There's been some good ones. Who was the last one you did?
We had James Posey. And Robert Horry was terrific.
Robert Horry
was so
like
good
him.
on the Spurs Rockets series when David Robinson got the MVP, and they said he told us on the pod, he goes, it's the only time I've ever seen Hakeem like, all right, I'm gonna just take it out on this guy.
Yeah.
Right now. So I think it was like 95.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool. And it you know, he talked about Hakeem. He was like, look, Shaq's dominant, but Hakeem was a better player.
Yeah.
And that it made the rounds. Yeah, I got a couple of things. I don't want to tease him because Luke Wilson, we ended up just pushing the interview back. We still have a friend coming on to do the life advice. So we have a writer and a fitness guy coming up. But I want to talk to Jarrett Jack. I think we're going to get him this week because he played in that Ignite team with the lottery picks there. And I think kids just, because I've gone back and watched those Ignite games to watch those two kids play. And I thought like Jarrett Jack was just trying to be a professional and, you know, figure his basketball life out. And so I thought it was a pretty unique experience. So hopefully he'll be a great guest for that.
Can I make a guest suggestion for you? And then we're really going to go.
Sure.
I saw Van Lathan this weekend. Van Lathan has this hidden secret thing that I didn't know about. He loves high school basketball and football and like has real opinions on the high school basketball top 20 recruits and shit like that. Like real opinions. So
I think then I can't hang with him.
No, like, I think you should have him on and treat him like he's Mel Kiper Jr. for the class of 2020. Like he has like Amani Bates takes. Like there's levels to it.
Guys are worried about Amani Bates development.
Yeah. He's breaking out Amani Bates stats, field goal percentage shit. I'm like, cool. What where have you been hiding this? So I think you're going to have to bring him on to talk high school basketball. Because I had no idea this was lurking inside him, and you can hang with this stuff better than I can.
I don't know that I can, though. I'm not going to be that great to talk to him about it. This might have to be, I'm not, I love
maybe
band,
you almost have to bring in him and like
somebody Mike, else, Mike right? Schmitz. Mike Schmitz. I'll just lay out, not talk for half an hour.
Van in a spare time becomes one of the dominant high school prospect guys.
You should have like you should build a Ringer page for him where he just thoughts, random thoughts. Like it's not even edited well. Just, you know, like,
we actually, we talked about and we decided we couldn't do it because his voice is too distinct. With that, we're just creating a character where Van pretends he's this other person and we give him a podcast that it's like Bob Johnson's high school basketball corner and he's just like doing, but it's really Van, but we never say it's Van. And
it should be like, no, Bob would be Amansky, able to figure it out. Bob Tom's younger brother that no one knew about. And he just makes fun of baseball the whole time too. It's like Tom got a, you know, wrong side of the tracks.
My favorite thing ever is when you think you know somebody and then you find out some secret thing they have going on like that. I love being surprised. I love being surprised by people in my life. So anyway, Russillo, pleasure as always. I will see you next Sunday. Bucks Twitter, be nice to us.
Fair. Stern, but fair.
And that was it for part two. Don't forget about part one, which is already up. So I will see you on Tuesday. Wanna see them on a wayside.